This is Carrie Campakis, and you are listening to the Girl Mom Podcast. Today on the show, I'm bringing on an old friend from Huntsville, where Harry and I lived as newlyweds. His name is Mark Russell, and currently, he's the executive director of the Huntsville Sports Commission. Mark served on the Huntsville City Council for 16 years and as president for 10 years, and he has an impressive resume and a long list of achievements as a community leader. For years, Mark has refereed high school football games, and one game in particular will always stand out in his mind because it changed his life. In 2017, as he officiated McCauley versus Madison Academy, Mark went into cardiac arrest there on the field. By the grace of God, his life was saved thanks to the right people standing close by and quick access to an AED device that could resuscitate his heart. In front of thousands of people, God performed a miracle and saved Mark's life. And today, Mark is passionate in sharing his story of what it means to live ready and also advocating for CPR training as well as AED devices in public places. Our last day on earth is something that nobody likes to think about, but all of us need to think about. And I'm so grateful for all the wisdom that Mark is going to share and his five main takeaways from his near-death experience. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review wherever you listen and share this episode with friends. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Mark, thank you so much for coming on the Girl Mom Podcast. I told you when you came in that you're the second male to be on the show. My last one was Will Hudson, and he's 23 years old. So I'm
the oldest.
That's right. You're the oldest. You're our generation. So welcome, and thank you for your willingness to come on the Girl Mom Podcast.
Glad to be here. A big fan of yours, and appreciate what all you do.
Well, thank you. I appreciate what you do, too. And as I was sitting there reading the intro I'd written, I mean, I just got chills just thinking about that. And I'm so glad you're sharing the story, because I would imagine it's hard to go back to that place. It makes me think of a friend who, her husband, she was on the other side of this. Her husband had an event like this a couple of years ago, and just a two-week, you know, just period. They didn't know what was going to happen. And she told me once, she's like, it's hard to go back to that period, because I remember all the feelings, all the emotions. And for a long time, she was hoping she could forget it, kind of bury it. But now she realizes that it's God's graciousness and his goodness that lets her remember, because it keeps her thankful and it keeps her sharing their story of what he did for them. And so anyway, I'd love for you just to kind of take it from there and tell us a little bit about what happened, and then we'll kind of get into the takeaways. But
sure. I was mid-50s, I would say active for a 50-year-old, but not a cross-country runner or marathon runner or, you know, doing CrossFit. So decent shape. Started to have some problems when I was walking. I would burp halfway through the walk, and my friends would laugh and go, "What's wrong with you?" And I didn't know. And went to the family doctor, did some stuff. We thought it was some kind of acid reflux problem, and was taking Tums, but continued on doing everything that I normally do. I was reffing lacrosse, jogging some, walking, just kind of living a normal, regular life for my age. And then one day I went to give blood. I gave blood every 60 days. I'd been doing it since college. And they said, "Your blood pressure's too high." And I was like, "That's weird." And so went back to the doctor. We talked about it, passed all the tests, and continued on. And then was all ready for football season. I've talked about this before with other people, but football season, to me, I get giddy with excitement. It's like a little kid for Christmas. You know, I just can't wait for football season to roll around. Can't wait to referee. I can't wait to be out on the field. Everything about it is exciting. And so it was the first game of the year, and I was just tremendously excited. Went about my day. Went and ate lunch. I thought this would be a fitting last meal. I had a barbecue sandwich and french fries at local restaurant Ted's, you know, so I was going to go out with a bang if it did happen. And that afternoon, I walked six flights of steps in the parking garage, and they said people shouldn't be able to do that. They were in my kind of condition. Yeah.
Wow.
And went to the game. There was all kinds of freaky things at the game. It was obviously very hot. You know, that day was August, and it was at a private Christian school, so they could pray before the game. And you just don't go to many football games where they actually pray.
I got chills when you said that. Wow.
Well, they pray. The gentleman that led the prayer. He prayed for the referees, but he was talking over the microphone, and there was a lot of reverb, and he talked, and he I could tell that he was kind of lost in his prayer, and he prayed for us twice.
Oh, wow.
And I remember sitting there thinking, oh, we need that tonight. You know, as a referee, you're always thinking,
Yeah, wow,
we could use your help, God. And so he did that, and I thought, wow, this is really cool. And so during the game, the first quarter, I knew something was wrong, but I thought it was my stomach. I never dawned on me that I might have had a heart attack or a heart problem. And I was thinking how embarrassing this is going to be to throw up in front of the kids, that they'll remember me for the rest of their lives.
Right, the one
the referee,
poor memory.
You know, that,
yes.
You know, had to be taken off because he was sick. And so a good lesson. My mother had always taught me I have to be nice to everybody, no matter if it's on the football field or not. And the photographer, this lady photographer, was in my way, and I had asked her to politely move, and she said, oh, she would. And it turned out she was the cardiac care nurse later in the story.
No way.
Yeah, so there was all kinds of little freaky things going
on.
Wow,
so thank goodness she'd been nice
to
her.
Yeah, she told me in the hospital, and I was like, oh, I'm so thankful for my mother.
Wow.
I never yell at anybody. I always have nice because my mother had taught me a lesson one time when I was little.
Right. Learned that lesson the hard way.
Yeah, I learned it, and so I practice it. So it was so fast. I knew something was wrong. It was coming. I had a friend that was an assistant coach, and before I could even yell out his name, it was just I was just gone.
So, did you just feel like a tightness where your heart?
No, it
is,
was
or
like,
what did it feel like?
If you've ever fainted, it was just a whoosh.
Really,
and it was so quick that I couldn't say help. And I knew, but it was just like boom. And then, obviously, I don't know much what happened. That's what we always laugh about, the 5 minutes of that story. After that, there's a lot of everybody has a little bit of different version. But basically what happened, the lady that was a photographer, Paulette Berryman, she was a cardiac care nurse, which was my luck. And she saw me go face first, and she knew it was my heart because – otherwise, you wouldn't go face first. You would put your hands down.
And she said she's a cardiac care nurse.
Yeah, so she
and
teaches.
And what are the odds? And was she with Macaulay? I guess
no. She was with Madison Academy, taking photos on the sidelines.
Okay.
So she was literally 2 yards from me, 6 feet away, because
wow.
I had just moved her. And they said she was pumping my chest. It said almost it felt like on the way down. People in the stands were like, "Man, she was on you fast."
Really.
And then just. Again, my luck, EMTs were right there. They happened to be with all the defibrillators, everything on the stretcher, just right behind Paulette, just happened to be standing there. And so in minutes, I got the best care you probably could get.
Wow.
Because there were doctors. It was Macaulay's, obviously, a private school. Madison Academy's a private school. There were a lot of medical people in the stands. And
wow.
And I just had a good experience. Well, those 5 minutes or so, whatever happened, they cut my shirt off. They, gave me the defibrillator. I woke back up. Well, when I woke back up, I didn't know what had happened. And I told the doctor, this guy was looking at me who I didn't know who he was.
And so you're on the field still right now.
I'm laying on the field, but I don't know that I'm on the field. All you can see, it's a weird experience when everybody's above you. All you can see are faces.
Right.
And this guy was looking at me, and I just remember he had a mustache. And I said, "I'm fine. I've been asleep." And he went, "You're not fine." He was mad. You know, like, "You're not fine."
Gosh.
And I was like, "Oh, no, I'm on the football field."
Mm.
And then I didn't know what really had happened. And they put me on the stretcher and they took me off. And so we get in the ambulance and I'm thinking, you'll probably laugh at this, but I was like, my wife's out of town. I'm in trouble.
Right. You're logistically.
Yeah,
you're
she's
thinking.
In D.C.
Yes.
She had been warning me that something was probably really wrong with me. And I hadn't listened
to your wife.
I know.
That's the moral of the story.
It is. Good moral. And yeah. I was just feeling terrible. And so I'm in the ambulance, and the guy goes, like, "Do you smoke or drink or all this stuff?" And I said, "No." And he was like, I don't understand what happened to you. And he said, "Is anything hurting you right now?" And I said, I thought I better tell the truth. And I said, "Yeah, it feels like somebody's punched me in the chest. Like, I mean, my chest is really hurt." And they just laughed. They said, "You have no idea what happened to you, do you?" And I was like, "No." And I thought I had just fainted from the stomach sickness.
Wow.
And they said, "We almost lost you back there." And I was like, "Me?" You know, and then they were trying to explain what happened. I was like, "Really? I had no idea." And so my chest, they said I was lucky I didn't have broken ribs because they had beat me pretty severely, you know, to get trying to restart my heart. And so on the way to the hospital, again, I was a city councilman, and not that it means all that much, but I had the police, you know, were there at the, you know, they were escorting the ambulance. And I asked the guys, I was like, hey, my wife's out of town. Does she need to know about this? You think we can... you know, keep this down low. He was like, not a chance. And I was like, why? And he was like, you know, the Channel 19, the Live Eye was there. Everybody was at the hospital. And I was like, man, I am in so much trouble. I couldn't think straight.
Right.
Because I was thinking, my poor wife.
Right.
You know, how are they going to find out? So I got to the hospital and you know, went through a lot of funny things in the hospital. When you're by yourself, it's very difficult to represent yourself in the hospital.
I bet.
And that's just something all citizens need to know. Without your family there, it's extremely hard.
Right.
And when you're a referee, you don't have your wallet on you, you don't have your driver's license, you don't have your insurance card. And so I was well known, but it was still, they must have asked me 100 times where my insurance card was.
Oh, wow. And you're trying to,
and 100 times I go, I'm
not in the
middle
capacity to like advocate for myself right now.
Yeah. So all that worked out well, but I was just so sad. I didn't know how to like explain it to my wife and how to get that news to her. So it was a rough night. I got a
sense. She probably heard of it by this point, I'm assuming.
Well, that was a good story. A friend of mine that happens to be a really good lawyer, and this is why, he called her thinking she already knew, and she was in a restaurant in D.C. with my daughter, and she didn't know. And he was able to figure it out on the phone without just terribly breaking the news in a bad way. I mean, he broke it in a nice way.
Yes.
I think it's going to be okay, but...
And that's such a grace. I was talking to a friend yesterday in a totally different situation, but it was some hard news that had she found out like a year after the fact, something that had happened. But she was talking about God's graciousness and like putting it in the lap randomly of her best friend, who's a very strong prayer warrior, who's just a very strong Christian and just had a great way of delivering it.
Yeah.
And so you think about like that was even a grace for him to be the one that
broke
it to your wife. You know?
And I'm sure he was like, oh, no. You know, why did I call?
Yeah. But, oh, and I just feel so sorry for her. I cannot imagine. She's out of town and just thinking, how quickly can I get back home? I mean, just so
yeah, and that was one of the things I think that really hit me hard is how it affects other people. Not, you know, what my wife thought, what my daughter, she was eating with my daughter. They were basically celebrating. My daughter had just moved to D.C. a month or two ago, and they were just in the restaurant, you know, having a great weekend, and I knew I'd ruined it, you know, and I felt awful, and my daughter was sick, and it just made it just a harder story than a normal just situation like that.
Yes, I can see that. Oh.
Yeah, and so got all that done, but I think the big part of the story is I was hooked to those machines all that night and had a lot of time to think. Your blood pressure's checked every 15 minutes, so there's no way to sleep. And so I was just in my head thinking for pretty much 9 hours by myself with nobody around.
Wow, because your wife was just trying to get back to town.
And she couldn't get back. You know, it was just all the stuff. A lot of things, and that's kind of what I think the story you and I are talking about is what I was thinking, when was last time I told my children I loved them? When did I tell my wife I loved her before she got on the flight, you know, to D.C.? Was I worrying about football, or, you know, was I doing other stuff? What was our last interaction? What should it have been? You know, did she know that I loved her?
Right. You know, so that was your first point. We say to live ready, say, I love you, I'm sorry, and I forgive you much more.
Because I really was sitting there thinking this could have been it. And in my mind, I had no warning. You know, wasn't like God said, you got 24 hours.
Right.
Make amends.
Right.
It was like, it could have been. It could have been then. And so it really kind of got to me that night thinking about what everybody feel. And even like silly little stuff like what was on the desk at my office.
Really?
Yeah, like would they know that contract had to be signed and sent out?
You're
tomorrow?
Just worrying about everybody else.
Yeah, you know, just all the things that
but
go on.
That just shows that you have such a giving heart and you like to be on the giving end, you know, that it's hard for you just to take care of yourself, which is a lot of people, you know, that, you know, it's hard to think about yourself and healing because you're just worried.
Yeah, and I don't want to. I don't want
that space to
ever
heal
be the problem. You know, yeah, I don't want to be the problem, and I was the problem. And
no, but you weren't the problem. But we're all going to have those moments, and it's hard if you love to give. It's hard to be on the receiving end. But maybe that, you know, God used that too to.
Yeah.
Because you were a little helpless, you know.
Definitely, it was
put
helpless.
You in that vulnerable position. Yeah, but look at the lessons you got from it too. And
yeah, and so I was just, and I thought about like when, what did I say to my mother last time? You know, when I've been over to her house, you know, why haven't I gone more? You know, just all kinds of things. Not necessarily guilt, but just wondering.
Yeah.
Like, what would she think? How would she remember that last interaction?
Well, let me ask you, having that perspective now, because that is something I'm sure that you believe 100% is like not holding grudges, you know. And we live in a world where people will have like one thing happen and they don't talk to a family member for 10 years. And I'm sure since this event, you've had people that you've heard them complaining or griping or being in a situation where they are so angry towards someone and they're holding that grudge. And I know you've got to be thinking like, you know, you never know. Because I even think that sometimes I'll get emails sometimes and somebody's so mad at their friend or somebody and they've cut off our relationship and don't want to. And I understand that there's a time for boundaries, but I also, you know, I try to advise that I'm like, you know, you never know what might happen to you or somebody else tomorrow. So I'm like, even if you feel like you have to have a hard conversation or there's boundaries, like, I would never want to be hooked up to a machine regretting something that I just said the day before, you know, before something happened to that person, like just kicking myself for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So has this changed the way that you counsel people or give advice, you know, because we do live in such an angry world where people don't forgive and like, I don't want to apologize. That's, you know, she's wrong. And
And certainly the boundaries. I'm not trying to overstep those boundaries. You know, if somebody does something awful to you or your family, you have to take care of that. But it's, I always think, like, how do I want to be remembered? And that's kind of in the back of
that's
my head.
Good.
Like, and that could be with the convenience store clerk or anything.
Right.
Is if today's the day and, you know, I get a wreck on I-65. You know, how did Carrie remember me or how did Harry remember me?
Right.
You know, it's in my head, back of my head. It's thinking, how do you want to be remembered? And most of these things that we fight over are just not important.
Right. And you probably felt that on that night.
Yeah.
Like just that just puts it in perspective.
I mean, all the stuff. And it's just not most of the stuff that we worry about and stress about in the end is not important. Now, we stress about it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've talked about it in some of your things, but it's just... it's not important, and that's where I get to the simplify life. You know, we probably have tried to simplify our life quite a bit since that time. And you're at an age where you have four children, and they have so much stuff; it's hard to simplify.
Right.
But we're at an age where we can,
you
know, simplify life, and so really working hard on doing things like that. I was so fearful I was going to be a huge problem to my family and my work colleagues.
I hate that. That just makes me sad for you that's what you were sitting there thinking. I understand because I'd probably be the same way.
I think you would be.
Would be, but it doesn't make you sad that we live in a world that, that we feel like a burden. I remember my mom even feeling like that just being sick the last 4 years of her life. Like she liked to be productive and able to give, and it makes me sad that you know that nobody wants to be in that vulnerable position. But
and the good thing, there's people that are willing to take up our slack and
pull out
Barry Men's of the world that save people and all that.
That's
wonderful. But I've been saying this a lot. Like, go ahead and have the garage sale. Just take care of the stuff. And I don't necessarily mean have a garage sale, but just go ahead and take care of the stuff you know that's a problem.
Yes. So that's your second point, is to simplify life and take care of material things and problems now. So I guess expand on that a little bit by simplify life. Do you mean, I mean, obviously mainly like simplify, like not so much stuff, but also the personal baggage that we carry?
I think get rid of, you know, I don't want to say make a list of all the people you've done wrong and all, but simplify it where, you know, get it down where you're good with almost everybody as well as you can make it.
Right.
And that will make you feel good. It's nice to get that off your chest, I think.
Yes, yes. And I do think, you know, and if you let God work in your heart, that can happen.
Yeah.
And even, you know, Harry has a friend that I thought this was interesting that he was talking about that there was a guy from college. And he's like, this guy got them in a lot of trouble, just in the same fraternity. And he was just a little bit wilder and he just had a bad taste in his mouth about this guy because he was always getting them in trouble and just kind of off the rails a little bit. But even like 10, 20 years later, when he'd think of this person or he'd see him out, he just would have this, ugh, like, you know, just that same feeling, you know.
Yeah.
And then as he grew in his faith and he was like, he realized that he needed to work through it, that it had kind of gotten worse over time and God was calling him to just work through it. And anyway, just God really just changed his heart and changed his perspective and made him realize that he needed to apologize to this guy. And it was like 30 years after the fact. And who knows if this guy even knew that he held such a resentment toward him or such a distaste for him. But anyway, and I do think this is something that comes with age and maturity, that they saw each other in recent years and he apologized to him. Like, you know, I think I was a jerk to you in the past. And anyway, they both cried and hugged, had this brotherly moment. But I thought that was such a good story about, like, you know, even if it's never too late. When I talk to teenage girls, I'm like, it's never too late to go apologize to somebody or to make something right. You know, especially you get to be our age and sometimes you don't realize, like, man, what I did that 20 years ago, that was kind of mean or that was rude. And I really should apologize for that. And it's never too late to do that and to teach our kids that same lesson too.
Yeah. And ask God for forgiveness. Hey, I did it, you know, and I wish I hadn't have and what should I do about it?
Yeah. And so, and then simplify life. And I like that too. I mean, I do feel like, I don't know if you think this, but I do feel like when you first get married and then you're in that whole phase of building your family and having kids, it's all about accumulation of like our 30s. Harry and I had four kids from 30 to 37. And it's like 30, it was just accumulation.
Yeah.
Like, we need a bigger house. We need more furniture. We need more. It's like more. And then, I don't know, there's something about your from 40 to 50. It's like, I want to, my brain is so cluttered. I can't even think straight. This is, you know, too much to keep up with. Let me just get I just want to get rid of all this stuff. And it is about simplifying and just really kind of clearing your head and clearing your house and clearing your space so you can just like really think and be present and, I don't know, just connect with others, connect with God. I think there's something, there's a tie there to simplifying and living with less and being happy with less.
Yeah, I think there is. And I think it's a good thing to do. Then I was thinking that night that, well, what would my family do with all this, my junk, you know, and my stuff and the stuff that like maybe I procrastinated on, not signed something or, not taking care of something I should have. It'll be so much harder for them to take care of it than it would have been if I'd done it. Like, how would they know what's valuable or what should be thrown away?
Right.
Why didn't I throw it away? Or why didn't I do whatever?
Yeah.
And so that was going through my head. I just, and I'm, My mother just keeps everything, and so I look at that and think, okay, I don't want to do that to my children. And we understand each other, and I know why she keeps everything, and she knows what I'm going to do with it. You know, we have a great understanding.
You
it's
just
not
can't
a problem
do it now, but
I can't do it now, and it would kill her. But it was just, but I don't want to. It's just I don't want to have all that stuff.
Yes, it is funny. Like some people get rid of everything, and some people just like to in case. Yeah,
and it seems the way like our children are going, they won't have gigantic houses and that kind of thing. So I don't think they're going to want all the stuff.
Right.
And hopefully they can digitize it or take pictures of it.
Yes, they are. It seems like they are getting kind of simplifying their lives and wanting more experience over maybe stuff or big homes.
They don't like be tied down.
Yes.
And so I think some of this stuff is going to go away naturally anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of I felt that night that like, wow, would my wife know where the important papers were if it had happened? Luckily, I'm still alive.
Right.
But it was just that night I just really did it. And so it's forcing me to put it all together, you know, to look at it. And nobody likes doing that.
Right.
There's not a person, I doubt, in the world that wants to prepare for all this stuff.
Right.
But you got to do it.
So that leads us to our third point. So the first point is say, I love you, I'm sorry, and I forgive you more. The second point is to simplify life in all the ways that we just talked about. And then that leads to the third point, which is to, you said, to keep a binder, which this is huge, with all the important papers, wills, obituary information, funeral plots, birth certificates, all those important documents.
Yeah.
It reminds me of a friend that I have that her stepfather, his real name is Richard, and he goes by Dick. And so she talks about he's an engineer. He's very organized. And I remember her telling me this like years ago. We were probably in college that she said that he has a folder. He has a folder called Dick's Death. So it's like all of this in there, you know, like he does not want his wife to stress, you know, when when that time comes. But I'm like, we really all need that. But like you said, it's hard.
Nobody wants
to do that. No, but and Harry and I actually, we had he's off most Fridays, and you know, we had a Friday, it was a couple of months ago, and I was like, I know we don't like to talk about this, but, you know, before a big anniversary trip we had done a few years ago, we did our wills and updated it since we had one child with the first time we did it. And we now had four children. And we're like, okay, a little more to think about here. And so anyway, we had done that, but I was like, we probably need to, like, think about if something happens to one of us that, you know, what do I want you to know? What do I need to know? Because, like, our situation is probably like a lot of situations. He does most of the finances. Yeah. Like, I'm going to be up a creek, you know, like, it's hard. But, you know, just having that conversation. But I started crying just even having the conversation,
right,
because
right.
It's so
awful.
Hard to go there. But like you said, it's so important, because I know somebody else who her husband was having his last breath, and he's trying to tell her, give her instructions on something to do to before, like in the last minute, you know, it was really stressful, and she was able to get that message across and get access to an account that she needed. But it's, you know, it was just a reminder that these things we procrastinate on could create a problem.
Yeah, and a lot of us think we're going to have this time, we're going to be sick for a couple years.
Right.
We'll be able to fix everything. You know, but in my situation, there wasn't that time.
Mm-hmm.
It would not have been that time. So that you have to think, oh, what if it happens today?
Yes.
Where are we at?
So did you kind of have a little bit of this stuff
together? I had it, but
I
would say my wife wouldn't have no idea where it was.
Right.
I mean, I'm pretty organized and all that, but like, and again, it doesn't really matter to the person dying, but like, I remember you wrote an article about writing your friend's obituary, you know, because it's, if you've been through a close person dying, like my father died, it's so hard on everybody.
Yes.
It's not the time to make good decisions. You just,
yes.
you really got to be tough to make good decisions. And there's so much of the industry encourages you to make what I would consider bad decisions.
Yes, yes.
And especially where you are, and if you're out of town, and who can if you can't trust the people.
Right.
And so I've been in small towns in Mississippi where the, you know, the guy is selling the deluxe pillow, you know,
for the coffin.
Coffin, and you know, a person of your stature, we need the deluxe pillow. You know, you're like, well,
right.
I've
heard that with coffins, that they're like going to make you feel guilty if you don't get the $20,000 coffin for your loved one or whatever.
And then that's
the nicest
time
wood.
To somebody there can make a good decision.
Yes.
But everybody else is all emotional into it. So it's really hard. And it's just a hard thing to do. And the younger you are, the harder I think it is.
Yes.
Like now, I'd be much more prepared when I was younger.
Right.
It freaked me out every decision like that.
Yes.
And so those, I think making a lot of those decisions will help a family if they know, like, you know, from, if I write my obituary, it'd probably be really cool. It'd be terribly written, but I'd have a lot of funny stuff in it. You know, I'd make you laugh.
Right, right.
But I'd expect that day, it would have been such an emergency. Nobody would have been there. My wife would have been out of town.
Right.
It would have probably been Mark Russell passed away.
Right.
You know, kind of thing. And so I don't know what's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, with your friend, I remember he was a very distinguished man, but you had to write it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that you were a great friend to do that, but it's hard that day.
Yes. And I will. Now, I can kind of touch on that story. And that was the story that I wrote was Why Women Need Their Girlfriends. And it was my friend Emily, and she now actually, she lost her husband. It was just had the 10-year anniversary of his death. And she now does financial planning, and she specializes in single women, because she's like, I've realized that's their number one fear is finances.
Yeah.
And if I feel like I can empower them there, they feel like they'll be okay. But on that day, I just remember what I witnessed at her house. She had so many different groups of friends, and everybody's there, and you're like, what do we do? But thankfully, I'd never really been through that with a friend before. But just what I observed, especially from women in her church who had been through this before, you could tell this wasn't their first rodeo with death.
Yeah.
But it's like you just hear these little groups planning, okay, we're going to do, for the reception, we can do this and this and this. And basically, we don't need to give her a lot of options. Let's give her one, A and B.
Yeah, because she's not making good decisions.
She's not making decisions. Yeah. And so, but in the meantime, she was back in the bedroom talking to the pastor about what she wanted the service to look like. And she had all of that going on. And so there were all these groups like, okay, what can we do without her first? You know, like, how can we simplify it for her as much as possible so that she can basically look at it and say yes or no, because you're in such a fog. And so it was her best friend, Mariana Malone, who I love too. She lives here in our community. And it was so cool. And that was part of my story is like, what, you know, somebody's close if they can write their best friend's husband's obituary.
Yeah.
But I mean, so we were like, let's just get a skeleton. This is like one skill that I can bring to the table. It's like, I can't cook. I'm not good with the food and all that, but I can help with the obituary. And I'd never written one before. And so anyway, so I was shot. Like, they'd been best friends, or husbands had been best friends through college. And I mean, we wrote the whole thing. She knew all these details from even before the kids were born, and his family and right. names and wow. all of this. And I was like, wow. And it wasn't me. I was like, this is impressive. So by the time Emily got out of that meeting with the pastor, the women from the church were like, okay, these are your options, A or B. She was like, okay, A, you know, and yeah. then we're like, okay, here's an obituary. If you can just read over it, make sure it's okay. But like you said, just taking that pressure, everybody wants to do something, but sometimes you just have to, instead of just offering, you just have to do what you bring, the skill you bring to the table.
Right.
Anything to take that burden off of them.
And we've talked about this before, but there was a minister in Mississippi that said, Mark, you know what needs to be done, just do it. You know, because so many people say, what can I do for you?
Right.
Or I'll be glad to help you.
Uh-huh.
Man, you know what, you knew they needed an obituary written.
Right.
Somebody knew they needed a dinner. You know, they know the wake.
Yeah.
We all know. Just do it.
Just do it.
So one of the best things people did for me one time with, I think it was with my father, they cleaned up. They knew we were having the wake. They knew we were out of town.
Mm-hmm.
When I got home, they had sent a lawn service over and cleaned the yard. And I thought, that's what I needed.
Yeah, you didn't even know that's what you needed.
I mean, but it yes. was perfect
yes.
gift.
Yes. Well, it reminded me with Emily, like, this people, like, I remember somebody, one of her dog-loving friends was like, I'm going to pick up your dog and take her, go get groomed.
Yeah.
Just those little things. Or I'm gonna pick up the girls since they go to gymnastics with my girls, and I'll take them to get yogurt afterward.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. I'll be carpooling for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, because they know you need that.
Right.
It just works great.
So keeping that binder. And so let me note here, you are so gracious. I'm so glad you did this too. In the show notes, we're going to link to all these important documents
right.
that can kind of help you with this folder.
Yeah, like you find out you need birth certificates. You find out you need all kinds of stuff that most of us would not know where our wife's birth certificates were, or your husband's birth certificates, unless you have a special file for them.
Right.
And just weird stuff like that, you know, insurance policies. And they could be all over the house. They could be at work. They could be in the safe, which you may not have a combination to.
Right.
You know, there's all kinds of things that you just kind of need to know.
And I think, too, with, like, digital banking, and, I mean, that's a whole new animal. Like, you know, this is where I get confused, because Harry, does it all. But
yeah.
I'm like, oh, great. Do I know the codes and the passwords
yeah.
and all of that? Like, it's a lot. And where's a safe place to store it, you know?
and one thing we've been talking about a lot lately, too, is all the social media accounts. You know,
when
I die, I want all my stuff out of there.
That's true. You don't want to get hacked.
I don't want them wishing me happy birthday 20 years from now.
Right. Yeah.
So we need all the passwords to all that kind of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I just remember, you know, with Emily too, I think that, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like, you know, the biggest concern is a lot of the financial stuff that, and there's a lot of expenses too. Like, do you have access to
right.
the accounts that
you're
going to need?
You definitely need money right away.
You need the money right away.
Everybody wants to get paid.
Yeah. And the funeral director, they're putting the pressure on you.
It's almost like a wedding where they tell you there's all these have-tos. You have to. And you almost want to go, I don't have to do anything.
Right. And I think that is a great point, because we've learned this just from having friends have to go to the funeral. And I'm not bashing all funeral homes and directors, because they're not like,
But when you don't trust them,
if you don't know them. And there is a lot of pressure, and you can be so emotional that you're like, you feel like you're cheating your beloved person if you're not getting the best of everything. But, you know, everybody has different budgets and different places you're going to spend your money. So it does help to have somebody, you know, like, it's a blessing when you have somebody that can be your advocate, you know, like, that can be your brain.
Yeah.
Like, I can't think clearly, but I'm taking you with me so that
polyester pillow is okay and not the royal cushion.
Right. You know? That's right. That's right. So they don't talk me into something that I'm going to be like 2 years later, like, why did I do that? You know, I could have put that money into much better use for the funeral somewhere else, you know. Okay. So that's a great thing. Yeah. So we've linked to those documents. The fourth point, And this is something you kind of touched on earlier. You said to realize you're going to be missed and your family is going to grieve.
Yeah.
You said you shared a story about your daughter at
the restaurant, when she heard. This story really hit me hard. I was talking to my daughter that was in the restaurant with my wife, and it was sometime after it. And she could tell something was wrong when my friend called her, mm-hmm. and then whatever heard, and she had to get up and excuse herself and go to the restroom, and she physically got sick.
Aww.
And it just dawned on me, like, how I didn't, I had been kind of joking around about that night and all that, but everybody has different perceptions,
right,
of that night, and I saw how much it just freaked her out.
Yeah.
And I felt so sorry for her. Mm-hmm. And then my wife also is like that. You know, like, if we were laughing about it now, she might not be laughing.
Right. You can laugh about it.
I laugh about it. Yes. And I tell stories and I speak about it. And, you know, we joke about it. And so it's kind of, I don't want to, it made it where I was like, oh, you know, you will be grieved. You know, people, no matter who you are, you're going to be missed.
Right.
In some way. I was thinking, everybody will get along fine without me. You know, that
kind of thing.
You know, but then I started, it just kind of hurt me and it made me think, okay, I got to do better. You know, I got to at least try to do my best, not only the health and everything, but get all this stuff together.
Oh, that's good. Well, let's go there. You're talking about like doing your best to take care of yourself and
like
to prioritize your health.
And I'm not the, you know, April would go here today. You still won't go to the doctor, but I do go to the doctor.
Yes.
I did all my appointments. You know, I did everything that I've been told to do.
Right.
Taking every medicine, even though I didn't want to, you know, just stuff. Mm-hmm. And some of it is because of that. I feel like I owe it to everybody.
Oh, that's so good. Basically, you're valuing your life is what you're...
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, I should be doing it for myself, too.
Right.
But I don't want anybody else to go through that. And,
yeah.
And so do that. It gave me, like, a lot of resolve to, like now when I walk, I'm thinking, okay, I got to walk for these people. I've got to be around. I want to see my grandkids.
Oh, wow.
You know,
that's
kind
good.
Of thing.
That's your motivation.
Yeah, like, what is my motivation? Because I'm not sure how to say exactly, but I'm not really scared of dying. You know, if people ask me that, I'm like, yeah, I'm perfectly good.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to see my grandkids. I want to do this other stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's given me a resolve.
And I think that is huge to feel like you still have that purpose, like to live with purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad has said that before too. He's 88 and he's like, you know, you think you'll be good. Okay, God, you can take me when my kids are grown or when I've seen them get married.
Yeah.
Or I've seen them have kids. But then it's like you get there and you're like, but I want to see my grandkids graduate from high school. Then they graduate from high school. Well, I want to see my grandkids get married. You know, like, but I was like, that's such a healthy drive. Like, God,
right.
I mean, I think those are the people who enjoy their golden years the most is like, and like I said, it might not be you're exercising because you love it. It might be because like, dang it, I'm going to stay healthy enough. And we need it more at this age. And I think this is such an important point because I know moms, it's really one thing that I really emphasize to moms because I was like, you know, we can get away with things when we're younger that we can't at this age.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to prioritize your health. And, you know, even myself, like I will take my kids to the doctor at the drop of a hat. Like I would never think of missing a doctor's appointment or getting off track. But every time I have a doctor's appointment, I'm like considering canceling it as I'm driving there. Like, I'm like, I don't have 2 hours of my day to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I hate those appointments and I don't mind exercising and all that, but it is that, but I'm the same way. I'm like this point, I'm like, I want to see my kids get married and I want to be able to help my daughters. I know how hard it is to be a mom. Like, I want to be able to help them in their adult lives and be that mother and grandmother who can just like take the kids or just tell them to go on a fun weekend with their husband and, you know, and I'll take care of everything at home with the kids. Like, that's good motivation, though. I think, and that's sometimes what's making us prioritize our health when we wouldn't otherwise do it.
Yeah, and so this 2017, both my daughters were not married, and since then they've both been married, and, you know, what a great days those were and how much fun it was and, you know, how much I enjoyed that and what a special memory that is for me. I would really hated to have missed it.
Yeah. Did you think about it on the days they got married? Did it cross your mind? Like, did you remember that day?
Every now and then I think, well, I wonder what would be like if if I had the night before, which part of the story, I had been at the track by myself running.
Mm-hmm.
April was out of town.
Oh, wow.
And I was very disgusted with myself that I didn't run a lap, which is, you know, like not for me, you know.
You didn't know what was going on.
Yeah,
inside
and
you.
I was thinking, but that could have, I could have pushed myself into, you know, been out there at night by myself.
Yes.
And so I think, well, how did it happen the night that happened to me? Everybody was there. And so there is, that was in the back of my head. What if it happened?
Yes.
24 hours earlier?
Yes.
You know, or what if it happened when nobody was home? You know.
And did you say that, is this the heart attack that's called the Widowmaker?
It's where your artery, your main artery is pretty much all blocked, and you just push it to the end, and then your heart goes out of rhythm. And I didn't understand all of it, but you basically have to be, you know, shock back in your heart into rhythm to go.
So when you were in the hospital, after you were wired up to all those machines, did you have to have surgery then too?
I had a stent put in that night.
Okay.
And that was all, there was tons of funny things, but like I said, it was on the news. You know, I was a public figure, I guess.
Yeah.
And so coming in the hospital, they were, you know, live eye. A bunch of my neighbors were in there.
It was like live coverage.
Yeah,
in the
live coverage.
Mark.
That's why I was trying to think. You know, I was saying, let's keep this on the down low. You know, and it was like, no, it was not working the way. And some of my, I live real close to the hospital in downtown Huntsville. And some of my neighbors were in there, and they had all had a cocktail. They were, you know, there was a lot of discussion about the best for my health, and I was trying to get them out of there. And we had a big group of just people that were involved in the story from the referees. It had gotten out in the football community that one of the referees had gone down.
Oh, wow.
And so referees were coming from everywhere to Huntsville Hospital to see
really?
If they could help and what happened.
Wow.
Well, nobody, they were all betting on who it was, and they were picking all the biggest, fattest guys, and nobody had me,
nobody
and it ended up
you.
Being me, and they were all just shocked,
but
it was me, so they were all out in the lobby, and they wanted to see me. And
this is like a movie.
It was. And another favorite part of the story is I was in the ER, and a police officer came up to me and said, hey, I'm your security detail, and I said, I knew this was going to be a problem. You know, whenever you're in politics, if you look like you're special, the public hates it.
Yes, priority treatment or something.
Yeah,
yes.
And I was like, oh, sir, I don't need it. I don't need a security detail. Mm-hmm. And the reason they do it is the media, to try to keep the media away from you, your family. And there's some reasons. But And so he said, well, the chief has ordered me to do it, so you really can't. You know, kind of like, I can't tell him. And I was like, oh, okay. And so he was guarding my door, you know, at night. And one of my friends came in, and if you've ever seen The Godfather.
I was about to say, it reminds me of The Godfather.
He came in and said, what are you, The Godfather?
That's
and
so
I was
funny.
Like, I know.
Is he
going
to try to roll you out like the sun?
I said,
That's
I guarantee I'm getting hate mail right now about that. It's
yeah.
good now. And so the mayor finally came, and he said, hey, why is that cop outside? And I said, can you get him to go? He said, oh, yeah, I can do it. You know?
That's funny.
And so he asked him nicely to leave. And the guy actually enjoyed being my security detail because he knew he wasn't going to have any problems that night. You know, he was just sitting out there watching TV with me.
Easy night for him.
And so that we always say, what are you, The Godfather? If you know the movie,
that's like one of my favorite scenes in the movie. It's so good.
Okay, so I had surgery that night, and they put a stent in. It's a pretty simple operation.
Uh-huh.
And I woke up, the next morning, I was still up, and a bunch of my doctor friends came in, and they were like, you look really good. And one of them goes, you know, you had been kind of gray. And I was like, that would have been good information, you know, last week.
Right.
He said, it looks like your blood's flowing. Do you feel good? And I said, yeah. He goes, are you eating breakfast? And I said, yeah. Is that okay? Because they brought it to me. And he goes, yeah, usually people aren't hungry, though, in your situation. And so I think it made me better, like immediately, a lot better.
Right.
And so they were all sitting around talking about it. But the advice they gave me was they were like, so tell me what your symptoms were. And I was telling them. And they were saying if you're a male at my age and it hurts in your chest, it's your heart, no matter what you think it is.
Oh, wow.
You know, I was telling them the acid reflux story, and they were all laughing, going, Mark, it's your heart. And I was like, now I know.
Right.
But at the time, I was burping, and I thought that was something to do with my stomach. And I
so if some a male or female is having that, what's your advice? Who should they go see?
Well, they said go immediately. Get to a cardiologist.
Get to
you know,
cardiologist.
I've been going to my family doctor, which is
right.
It just was getting physicals and all that, they said, if you're hurting in your chest,
yes,
just go to your cardiologist. All they can do is tell you it's not it. I mean, that's right. Great.
Yes.
But he said, they were all saying, I guarantee you, they would have told you, you got a problem.
Right.
And fixed it.
So how long do you think it had been going on before something happened?
I think years, you know.
Really?
But I didn't think that was happening.
And yes.
There's some key words. I think you have to say you're out of breath and you can't run. And I would probably never say those, but I didn't experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was coming in, you know, officiating and doing lacrosse and doing all this stuff, Right. The doctors in their head never thought they would be like, he wouldn't be able to do that.
Right. But everybody's body's different.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great point too, is to remember to like know yourself and know what's normal and to pay attention to those red flags and to value yourself. Because like, you know, it sounds to me like you're just like, I don't want to be a burden to anybody. I don't have time for this. Like we all do. And I think too, at our age, it's so easy to be like, well, I'm older. Of course I can't run like I could when I was 20.
Yeah,
like,
I'm not willing to accept that.
Yeah, but sometimes we can kind of blame it on age, but really there might be another issue going on.
Yeah, and I will say my wife, April, was all over this.
So tell me a little bit about April. What had she seen that you didn't really respond to before?
Well, like when I burped, she just looked at me and said, something's wrong with you.
Mm.
You need to go get it fixed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, babe, I'm fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with me, you know, kind of thing. And
yeah.
And she just had this look of I don't want to say disgust, but it was a look of a stern, motherly look.
Yes.
Of, you're messing up. And she kept telling me. But she didn't know what was wrong either. She just knew something was wrong and that she didn't believe that I was working hard enough to find out, which I wasn't.
Right. And so do you now? Has it changed the way you prioritize your health?
I mean, I go to all the doctor. I didn't miss a single appointment. I did everything everybody's told me to do. I hate taking medicine. Never took medicine, but I've taken every pill they've given me, and I've done it.
That's good.
Every day, like I'm supposed to. And my
blood pressure. Still do it now?
Yeah.
Wow.
Blood pressure, cholesterol, everything's good. You know,
good.
And I get tested all the time, but I'm not the first one to go to the doctor. I just, like if I'm sick, I just assume.
Yes.
Grind it out.
Yes.
And so I'm still working through that a little bit.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard because we're all busy. And
yeah, and I just...
Who likes going to the doctor?
I don't like going, and I don't like being a problem.
I know. But I think, you know, going back just to just from the faith perspective, and I think this is a good lesson for anybody listening, is just like what we talked about, valuing your life, you know, and that we're all here for a purpose. That God has, and obviously He knows our days. They are, you know, they are ordained before we're even born, but just valuing our life enough and knowing that, you know, we don't want to be a problem, but, you know, that's what we're here. And sometimes even when I learned this with my mom, like, because I'm like, I'm so much like her, like I would feel the same way, that sometimes she just felt like, you know, she hated feeling like a burden, even though she wasn't, but just because she couldn't be as productive as she once was. But I'm like, when I look back, even like, man, sometimes I just think, God, you know, because sometimes she's like, well, I don't know why God was keeping me for so long, because she couldn't walk for 4 years. It was a hard journey, but mentally she was there.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I was so thankful, but I'm like, I grew so much in those last 4 years. Like for the first year or two, I really just wanted her to bounce back and be productive and be my mom again, which is so selfish. But really, like, it's like everybody around you has their own journey too. And I'm like, but now, like when I see somebody in a wheelchair, I'm so much more compassionate. Like, I know how hard it is for them to even get into the car or to go to the bathroom or to move out of their way, and just making you more compassionate and empathetic. And then toward the latter years of my mom's life, like I quit like wishing for her to be able to help me, and just like, I just need to love her and appreciate her. So it's like, even if you are the one that's in that vulnerable position, you're doing a favor to the people around you. Like, those are the people that teach us to be more empathetic and compassionate and kind, because at some point we're all going to be there.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and we don't want to be in that position. Like, I wish I had not been such a jerk to everybody when I was on the productive end of it.
How do you want to be remembered?
Yeah. Exactly. How do you want to be remembered? And so, you know, looking at it, it is a gift to let people help you and help take care of you, that the blessing really does work both ways. And God is working in it all, you know, even if, as He's healing you, He could be healing something inside the person that's taking care of you too.
That's a good message
so
right there.
So just remember that when you're feeling that way, if ever again. And then, okay, so the last point, the last takeaway of kind of what you were thinking that night that you would want people to know to live ready for their final day, is to enjoy every minute of life and to look for the silver linings, laugh, and just do things.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, and I probably have done this pretty well most of my life. I mm-hmm. tend to laugh at most things and think they're funny. And
which is good.
My jobs have, you know, I was a city councilman, a referee, kind of a high pressured business world, and I've been yelled at quite a bit, you know, and I'm just used to people yelling at me, and I kind of laugh it off and make it a funny story. And,
right.
and again, this that night of my heart problem, it's a funny story to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Like you said, your wife wouldn't find it
yeah,
funny.
Yeah, I'm not sad about it. I don't cry. Yeah. I don't think anything about it, except when I worry about my daughters or my wife.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. And so I say enjoy every minute of life. It's just like this morning I went to the bookstore and I had a great time. You know, I was looking from one of my friend's books, you know, and I just mm-hmm. had so much fun when I found it, you know, and just yes. different stuff. And I thought, well, that was fun. You know, that was a great minute of my life. And I was looking for silver linings and mm-hmm. anything when it's raining. And then just driving around Mound Brook, I have, I was laughing to myself because my wife's from Mound Brook and I used to get so lost trying to pick her up on dates.
You did?
Yeah.
I can
you know,
see that.
I can't, I still cannot figure my way around
yes,
Mound Brook.
Yes, I can totally see that.
It's
that was
dark.
Before Google Maps,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it was before maps, before yes. phones.
Right.
And so you had kind of one shot to get into Mound Brook and find my date, you know, and get back out.
Right.
And it often didn't work. And I'd end up, you know, back on the outskirts of Mound Brook somewhere.
Yeah.
Payphone trying to figure it out. And I was just laughing to myself, like, I wonder if I could find her house. You know, our old house,
yeah,
just things like that, and when you said, "Hey, can you be here like in 10 minutes?" I was thinking, "Yeah, but I'll probably get lost." You know, I was thinking,
"Yeah, isn't that funny?"
Because every place in Mound Brook looks the same.
You know? I know. Well, when we used to live near the high school when we first moved here, and I had Ella, and I kept a map in my car because I am terrible with directions,
uh-huh.
and I had this fear of like having my baby and needing to get home for something, and I couldn't find my way home. It sounds so silly, but we lived in the area where the one street would turn into another street.
Oh yeah,
I just couldn't figure it out. Like it was not registering with my brains. I kept a map in my car in case I got lost
yeah.
for those moments.
And they say, I just go to the village.
It.
And I'm like, I don't know which village. I don't know
there.
The village.
Yeah. Well, but it sounds like you're just an optimistic person by nature. So it sounds like you were probably like that before this happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
But would you say you're even more so
yeah,
that way
definitely.
Now?
Now mm-hmm. I just think, hey, might as well laugh today. What happens?
Yeah.
Tomorrow you can't laugh.
Yeah. Know, I mean, and I think about that too, because sometimes, you know, the last episode I just did was on anxiety, and I've struggled with anxiety my whole life, mm-hmm. but sometimes when I'm feeling it get the best of me and I'm like, okay, if this was my last day, even if there's a reason to worry right now, is that really how I'd want
yeah.
to spend my last day? Like, even if there's something to worry about, no, I don't want to spend my last day just worrying and not enjoying anything.
But don't you think there's always something to worry about?
Yes, totally.
And so
always.
That's what
even if your life is good, there's somebody that you're hurting for, you know,
oh,
like
yeah, yeah.
if you're connected with other people, like there's something, there's always a sadness in your life.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that goes back to the point. I do think this is something, a skill you really have to develop as you get older, is to let joy and pain coexist and like to be able to find joy in a day, even if everything's not perfect or if something is really sad in your life. But looking, like you said, for those silver linings.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big believer in that. And I say laugh, you know, that everybody loves to laugh.
Yes.
And it makes you feel better to laugh. So
yes.
I enjoy this. And we talk about doing things. Like so many times we just don't do anything. We just sit at home.
Yes.
And there's times you need to, and there's times you need to rest. But I choose, like, if somebody says you want to go, I usually say yes.
That's so good.
And again, like, last night I was in town for the basketball tournament. That was like, hey, I wanted to go watch those kids play. It probably wasn't the best thing to do with my time, but I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And then we went out with some fraternity brothers last night, and one of the guys said it. He goes, you know, I had too much to do. I wasn't going to come out with y'all, but I'm so glad I did.
Oh, I love
that.
You
had so much fun, and we did, and we don't see each other hardly ever.
Right.
And he really understood the meaning of, you know, this friendship that had started 40, 50 years ago.
Yes. Yeah. That's so good. And it's like, God, you don't realize how much we need those connections, especially when we're all so busy.
Yeah.
And it makes me think of Harry's priest here at the Greek Orthodox Church. He worked in Greece, I think, for like 10 years. And I remember when he first moved here and started in Birmingham, I was like, what's the difference? Because, you know, family loves Greece. We've been there a couple of times, big family trips, and my kids are like obsessed. But I was like, what's the difference between, you know, working in Greece and then working in America? And he's like, just the pace of life. And he said, if I ran into an old friend in Greece that I hadn't seen in, you know, 10 years, We'd say, hey, you want to go get a cup of coffee? We would drop everything and we'd go have coffee for 3 hours. But he's like, if I happened here, ran into an old friend, we'd say, hey, we should get coffee. And then, you know, we'd get each other's numbers and it might or might not happen.
Right.
And I thought, that is so true, because we pack our calendar so full that we don't leave that margin for the little surprises in the day. Like somebody to say, hey, you want to go do this? And I'm as guilty. And that's one thing I've learned as I've gotten older is like, don't ever schedule myself, like leave room to be able to have those those last minute spontaneous things.
I don't
like
know. I don't know if you're doing that very well. You seem really busy.
Right now, I am. I can kind of spread it out a little bit. But right now I'm definitely in a working season. I'm editing a book, but I do try. I used to pack so much into my calendar that there was like not room for anything like that.
And then would you be sick, like if you didn't get it all done and all that?
Yeah. I mean, and it was just never enough, And I was living on like 4 hours of sleep. And I was like, you know, you just get older. I'm like, I might write fewer books. I might do fewer things. But, you know, it's worth it because you've got to have those relationships and moments with people.
Do you think you live ready?
Oh, girl, that's a good question. I like to think that. But I'm sure if I was hooked up to machines, I would be like you were. Just worried about everybody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think you would be too.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what are my girls going to do?
Yes.
How are they going to handle this?
Yeah, I know. And like I said, and I was thinking too, it's funny because Harry and I were talking about this the other night, how I told you he's Greek Orthodox. And in their church, like they always do an open casket unless there's a reason, unless the person is not really in the presentation state to do that. But they want you to think about death. And I was like, it's so different than our culture. And it made me think of even my dad. He lost his mom, I think, when he was 8 or 9 years old. And he told me one time, he's like, yeah, I remember she was like in our den. Like she was in the den for like 10, like a week. And he remembers people coming to the apartment. I'm like, your mom was there, like deceased in your house? He's like, yeah. But back then, that's what they did. It's like death was a part of life and you were forced to think about it. And so now, but I'm like, that's why it just, we don't want to go there because we're not like, there's, you know, and I'm not saying it's bad to have a closed casket, but,
right. You
know, like sometimes, you know, we just remember the pictures or the videos or whatever, but we don't really want to think about death itself. But like you said, and I think this goes back to your point, we have to think about our final day if you want to live a better life and think about how you want to be remembered. I mean, that's pretty big motivation for making the changes that we talk about making, but don't necessarily make.
Definitely.
So, okay, anything else that you would tell? You know, there might be some moms listening to this, but I'm suspecting that a lot of women might be sending it to their husbands too.
Yeah.
Like it might be the women that they've been telling their husband to go get checked out.
Get a checkup.
They haven't had a physical in 5 years or whatever. Like anything that you would like to say to the men who might be listening?
I do think just think what live ready means to them,
mm-hmm.
You know, and how do they want to be remembered? And if they could just imagine tonight when they're in bed, this was the last night, you know, what would they do? And then think of maybe what they could do differently the next day, you know, when they wake up.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good. Well, Mark, and you know, I know that God, he kept you here for many reasons. I mean, we need you. And one of those reasons is to be able to share this story and this message because it's so important, like I said, in making us think this way. And I'm even thinking, Harry and I need to go revisit our conversation of like living ready.
Yeah, and I hate to do that to Harry.
I know. Sorry. That's okay. Harry does the editing. So Harry, as you're listening, we can just put it on the calendar. We're going to have to find another Friday to go talk about this hard topic. But like I said, there's so many other things that you would be worrying about if you lost somebody you loved that I think anything we can do to make it easier for the ones who are behind would be a blessing. So thank you so much. We loved getting to see you. This is such a great story and an important message, and I just hope you keep sharing it.
And thank you for what all you do. I'm a big fan. I've been following you on social media. I'd gone to a social media class, and they said, the best thing you do for your friends is to like their social media.
Aww.
And you were just getting started. It was probably 10 years ago.
Yes.
And I bet I've been your biggest fan.
Thank you.
And I think of that. And then I wish I watched my wife do a lot of the things that you advise and recommend to do. But our girls were older than your girls. And
mm-hmm.
I wish we could flip that. I wish I could read your stuff and then help our children. So
you're
a great
sweet.
Job.
Well, thank you. I tell moms all the time, half of it's like I write about things that I wish I had done differently. And I do think that's a gift we can give to that next generation is like, you know, sometimes we just learn these lessons the hard way as parents or people.
Sure.
And I would definitely go redo a lot of things differently. But, you know, I think we can can go give it back and help the people behind us. It gives a little purpose to it.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you. I hope you'll come back on the show and come see us again here in Birmingham. Friends, thank you for tuning in today. I am so grateful to have you here. And if you enjoyed this show, please subscribe wherever you listen and leave a ratings or review so that other people can find these messages too. For links to my books, my social media, and my new community on Substack, check out the show links. Thanks again for your support and have a great day.